Vasily Petrenko, what are you most proud of having achieved in your first 3 years as principal conductor of the Royal Liverpool Phil?
The most proud I'm about audience. We achieved 40% growth of audience. And hopefully this habit for the classical music will just increase and increase in Liverpool, with the help from everyone, with the help from local governments, with the help from British government, and the involvement of all good people of Northwest, and all the proper scousers as well.
Now, you are in the process of recording all the Shostakovich symphonies, which is a huge project. What's been your relationship with the symphonies, and why do you think they are such an important and unique achievement for our times?
Well, I think that, first of all, they've been in my life since I remember me. They've been played in St. Petersburg and regularly and every year. Even funny enough, they're still being appreciated, most of them, as a contemporary music in Russia. And of course, the top hits like the 5th, 7th, 8th, or 10th, they are well received and well attended. But when you put something less usual like 12 or 11 or 4.
Really? In Russia?
Yeah, it might scare the audience a little bit.
What?
So I can remember his music since the very beginning. And to be honest, it's the spirit of Leningrad. It's true spirit of Leningrad.
But it's also a chronicle, isn't it, of Soviet life? That extraordinary.
If talking about the historical context, I'm staying actually on a position about a bit more broad picture about his symphonies, because usually on the West is a lot of attention to the political side of it, while in Soviet Union and in Russia it's been absolutely opposite. The most attention has been about structural side and about the musical side, neglecting the political because it's been not allowed for many, many years. I think, first of all, it's a picture of his life. The whole cycle, in my point of view, is a huge biopic about the life of an artist in the 20th century under the Soviet Union regime. And not only reflecting the political side or historical side, reflecting his own life as well. Family life, relations with other composers, relations with the music society, his relations with some great musicians like Slava Rostropovich, for instance. It's a history of the life of an artist.
See, some of us in the West wonder why he stayed in the Soviet Union when he was subjected to such humiliation on occasions.
Well, first of all, he's been very introverted human himself. He kept silence most of the time. Yeah. And in fact, the silence quite often meant much more rather than he would say anything.
Yeah.
For him, what was important is to have a wife who will take care about the food and about laundry. To have a room with a table, not necessarily with a silence, but with a working table, like work desk, on which he can write the music. And the piano was not necessary. It's funny enough that the pictures, Shostakovich on the piano composing music, it's not fake picture, it's once upon a time. But he quite never composed on the piano.
Did he compose in full score straight away? Like Mahler?
Yeah. And there are very, very few drafts. And the last thing which he was needed was hot water in the bathroom.
That's amazing. You said his silence spoke volumes, but also there were lots of coded subtexts in his pieces.
The scripts are famous.
Clearly these were deliberate, these messages he was sending out. Did he really expect audiences to decipher them and understand what he was trying to say, do you think?
I think he tried to write the pieces for the broad range of the classes and all broad range of the intellectuals. Mm. The first symphony, of course, it's a conservatoire finishing work, and that's what he had been written for a year. Then second and third symphony, he felt like he failed because it's been commissioned works for industrial concerts. And then came the Fourth Symphony, which been kind of laboratory in many ways. And that has links to most of the pieces
yes.
later on.
Absolutely.
And then he found this style from the Fifth, when he'd been able to put the music into the earth of the proletariat, basically. And at the same time, he'd been able to encode some things for the very little amount of his friends. And for the intellectuals who knows this or that, he tried to speak from his heart most of the time. But because of the restrictions in what he could say, sometime it seems to me that he stopped himself of saying it openly, because otherwise he could have much bigger troubles. And he just encrypted them and put the things in a different way.
Better to have a voice than no voice at all. Yeah. The Tenth Symphony was a great watershed for Shostakovich, an expression of hope and optimism after the death of Stalin in 1953. Do you think of it as being a symphony of two halves, before and after Stalin?
Difficult to say, because he never put dates, exact dates, on this symphony when he had written which movement. He declared really quickly, even before the premiere of the symphony, the devil is dead, but the demon's still in place. And he really felt that it's nothing changed. I mean, later in 55, 56, he'd been feeling a little bit better before all the Prague and the Hungarian rebels and all these kind of things later on. And also, of course, the death of Prokofiev, the death of Shebalin and Myaskovsky much earlier. So it's all, he felt that like the last survival. And also around this time, around the 10th Symphony, he'd been appointed already as the secretary of the Composers' Union. And he has been sitting next to Khrennikov for years afterwards, in all the plenums and everything, all around. He actually say he visited a lot of international congresses, and then he said that they've been abused to have their headphone just to listen to the translation, and he'd been so bored by that that most of the time he unplugged it. He unplugged it, and he felt it's much better. He can't understand anything. I think that's about himself. But he'd been sitting next to the person, to Khrennikov, who initiated, in fact, all the campaign against him. Shostakovich knew about the Khrennikov that he initiated, and about this anti-formalistic riot, for instance. There are a person who almost directly portrayed. And Khrennikov as well, he knew that Shostakovich knew about him. And they both weekly spent about 2 hours together in the plenums, next to each other, having discussions with each other. So he really felt that they're definitely the one of the epoch is gone. The 10th for Shostakovich is also reflecting the funerals of the Stalin. He actually said that Prokofiev outlived the Stalin for 10 minutes. The official time of all the death of Prokofiev is 10 minutes after the Stalin.
Isn't it?
And Shostakovich, of course, visited the Prokofiev funerals. While the Stalin funerals had enormous amount of victims, even his death goes a lot, because the people just been walking through the streets. And in fact, by the memories in my family, for instance, the brains were so good washed before that the people really got cried. So the whole country really felt enormous sorrow by the death of
Stalin. Well, they're trying to rehabilitate his memory now, aren't they? In the news, one is here.
Well, that's another story. That's always discussion. Yeah. Does Russia needs a strong hand on the top or not?
So to
finish that, and because by the memoirs, the canalization shafts, they've been backed by the bodies, because the people have basically been falling down there and just died there. By the unofficial statistic, there are about 10,000 people.
Gosh, I had no idea. Do you think that the scherzo of this symphony is a portrait of Stalin?
It's a portrait of the tyrant. Not necessarily Stalin. I think it's a bit primitive if you just think of the 10th, like, you know, the portrait of the artist, the portrait of the tyrant, the life of it, and the life. I think it's more complex work. It's also a reflection of the world around. And it's a reflection of the years before of oppression. So from 48, from 49. So he haven't written any symphonies for 8 years. It's the only period in his life when he haven't written. And other times, it's every 2 years or every 3 years he had written one of the symphonies. And that's the time when he had written huge amount of the movie music.
Some people think this is actually one of his most perfect pieces.
I would say, in a way, it's very well balanced. If you wouldn't know other symphonies, if you would listen to the 10th, you would say that it's a perfect piece. But I would say it's not so extreme as others.
How do you approach that scherzo in performance? What kind of tempo do you go for? Because it's an amazing movement, a short, sharp shock of tyranny, as you say. Do you opt for a faster tempo?
Quite fast tempo. But the most important is the consistency of the pulse. Mm. The most important is that you have this mechanic rhythm which just keeps going and drives you mad by the end of scherzo, especially. And that you just keep it. That you never lose even a fraction of the pace, and never gain a fraction. So that you don't have any acceleration or any slowing down in the symphony. So it's a difficult one to record as well. It's a very, very difficult one to record.
One of the reasons I pointed to the idea of before and after Stalin was because the last two movements of the symphony are remarkable for another aspect, and that is the emergence of this composer's own monogram, DSCH, which
as well as this Elmira Nazibova theme.
Yes, exactly. With the
interesting, exactly. Actually, that if you look into the composition of the third movement, those themes, they introduced separately. Of course.
There are two themes in the third movement we're talking about now, yes.
And then the development section, when the both themes are going through, but they never close to each other. So they always keep a distance. They're never in the same register or never in the same colors. So there are certain distance and circumstances which not allows them to get closer.
So this is the woman that he was said to have...
She was his student for a while, and she went from Azerbaijan. And actually, funny enough, that the last movement, the first opening recitativo, it's very related to Azerbaijan song, folk song. And Shostakovich has been few times in Baku, in the capital of Azerbaijan, and because there have been a very rich generation of the musicians, not composers, but all kind of the pianists and other performers. So she went into the Moscow, and they met with the Shostakovich, of course, a few times. But then she left and spent most of her time in Baku, and then later immigrated to Israel, I think. And I think she has been his muse at that time, especially in the third movement. That's in the moment when the tensions get much more strong. This is kind of exaggeration of the basses and cellos, which you would expect would lead you to another huge Shostakovich climax, especially after knowing what's happened in the second movement. But instead of it, it's interrupted by her theme. And it's like appearance of a muse, an angel, who suddenly diverts him from the struggling with those stupid politicians and the stupid powers around into the pure music.
We should explain for people who are coming to these pieces that this musical monogram, DSCH, Dmitri Shostakovich abbreviation, is based on the notes in German transliteration, D, E flat, C and B, just so that we know. And that is, in the last movement, it achieves a really liberating self-assertion, doesn't it?
In my point of view, it's a declaration that I'm still alive.
Yes.
The bad boy has died and I am still alive, in a simple words. But it's also declaration that whatever the pressure against me, my music will survive throughout the years. I think by then he already been sure that he, by then, already left a huge heritage for the further generations, years and centuries.
And at the end of the piece in the coda, I mean, those four notes... just take over, don't they? And finally the timpani has the last word solo.
Which also leads us to the first symphony, links us to the climax of the first symphony. And that's where it grew up from.
Everything is connected.